a breakthrough moment in the Civil War when the war became uglier and rougher, when civilians began to suffer. As we've seen in this course, the war had turned in that direction far before Sherman's march. But more specifically, in 1864, that had begun with Sheridan's campaign. In the last lecture, I read Grant's instructions to Sheridan. They were virtually identical to Grant's instructions to Sherman that I read just before this march. So Sherman is in Savannah. He's gone to the sea, conducted one of the most famous or infamous, depending on your point of view, campaigns of the war. What does he do next? Well, he will march up through the Carolinas, and let's turn to that phase of his campaigning. His march through South Carolina and then on into North Carolina. He rested in Savannah for a while. It was winter, after all. He'd gotten to Savannah just before Christmas. It's winter. He's going to build his army to an even larger size. It will eventually have 100,000 men, and he needs some supplies for an army that large. So he stockpiles supplies, refits his army, and prepares to march north. His plan is to go to cut a swath through South Carolina, much as he did through Georgia, and then move into North Carolina. And as he approached Virginia from that direction, there might even be an opportunity for cooperation with Ulysses S. Grant, depending on what transpired between Grant and Lee on the Virginia front. The immediate target, South Carolina, the cradle of secession, and a target of very special attention for virtually all the Union soldiers that would be involved in it. Grant wanted Sherman to tear up the railroads in North and South Carolina, upon which Lee depended for supplies. He then wanted him, if possible, to join the Army of the Potomac to squeeze Lee. But Sherman's soldiers weren't thinking that far down the road. They were thinking about South Carolina and making South Carolina feel their wrath. Before Sherman started, Fort Fisher, guarding Wilmington, North Carolina, fell. That was on January 15, 1865, to a joint land and sea expedition. This closed the last Confederate port. Other raids were also put in motion. 40,000 Union infantry struck from Mobile into the interior of Alabama. Here's the long-delayed element of Grant's strategy of exhaustion in the Western theater. He'd been hoping to do this for a long time. That finally gets going here toward the end of the war. And also two strong cavalry forces moved from Tennessee into Alabama and South Carolina, again with the idea of destroying whatever they found that might be of value to the Confederate war effort. Sherman and his army headed toward South Carolina, third week of January, 1865. 100,000 strong. In front of them were only about 20 to 25,000 Confederates. The remnant of the Army of Tennessee, between 10 and 11,000 very hardy veterans, had come east. They'd been nearly destroyed under Hood, of course, the previous December, but here they are, ready to fight in the Carolinas. They, together with some troops that were in place, brought the total to 20 to 25,000 opposing Sherman. The weather was terrible. It rained for 28 out of 45 days as the Union Army marched north, but it didn't seem to make any difference. Sherman's army averaged 10 miles a day, just as it had during the campaigning in Georgia. The troops cut down, it seemed, whole forests to corduroy roads so they'd be passable. That is, cut down the trees and lay them on stringers through the mud so that wagons and other and artillery and so forth could move in bad weather. They built bridges across rivers and swamps. They seemed unstoppable. Robert E. Lee had been made General-in-Chief of the Confederate armies at the very end of January, in the midst of Sherman's campaign, just as Sherman got going. And he brought Joseph E. Johnston back into command and placed him in charge in the Carolinas, Lee did. So it's Sherman against Joe Johnston again, just as it had been in the opening phase of the Atlanta campaign. And Johnston was absolutely stunned at the rate at which Sherman's men moved. Upon hearing that the Federals had crossed a virtually impassable swamp without even slowing down on one occasion, Johnston said, "There has been no army in existence such as this since the days of Julius Caesar." Charleston surrendered on February 18. A black regiment was the first Union unit into the city. Some of the men in that regiment had been slaves in Charleston, not that long before. The fall of Charleston was deeply symbolic. This was the cradle of the Confederacy, the nest of secession, and it was a wonderful day for most Northerners when they could look to Charleston and know that it was in Union hands. It wasn't burned.